and welcome to the What We've Watched podcast. My name is Chris.
This is Emmett.
And this is episode 381. And this week, Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yes. So Battle Beyond the Stars was a story by John Sayles and Ann Dyer, screenplay by John Sayles, directed by Jimmy T. Murakami. That was released in July 1980.
Yeah.
So this was our Beyond movie for this month.
Yeah. Inadvertently, we did a Beyond movie, a movie with Beyond in the title in January and February. So we've decided to run with that as a theme for the year. And so this is our Beyond movie for March.
Monthly Beyond movie.
Yeah. Just fun coincidence.
Well, this is also already on the list.
Oh, was it? It was already we wanted to do
but
it.
But we didn't have a specific time for it.
We were just like, oh, so why don't we do it now? And then, so this movie was made hot on the tracks of the Star Wars hype.
Yeah. It's definitely another of those in that Star Wars ripoff genre, subgenre.
Similar to the one we did a few weeks ago there.
That Orin Star Chasers, Legend of Orin or whatever.
Yeah.
But this one's not animated. This one is actually a Roger Corman production, the famous B-movie producer. And it's funny enough, it is clearly and definitely was made because of to sort of try and get in on that like Star Wars like sort of ripoffs of genre. But it's actually technically a Magnificent Seven / Seven Samurai remake, essentially, for all intents and purposes. And there's a lot of things that kind of reference that or have some.
I mean, the basic plot.
It absolutely 100% is, but like
the Star Wars part of it is the fact that it's like in space with aliens and spaceships
but what I mean is that the initial like Roger Corman's initial push to decide to make a movie like that or have a movie like this made under his company was because of Star Wars.
Yeah.
But they obviously decided that, you know, they were gonna obviously do something a little different with it, which was to essentially do a Magnificent Seven, Seven Samurai remake. And there's like a number of odd sort of connections. Like they were aware of like both because like the planet is called Akir and the people of the planet are the Akira.
Yes.
Or the Akira, technically. And that's named obviously after Akira Kurosawa, who made Seven Samurai, legendary Japanese filmmaker. And then like they have, like, one of the main characters, well, not really main characters, if whatever you want to call it, part of the ensemble of characters, is, like, played by Robert Vaughn, who literally 20 years earlier co-starred in the Magnificent Seven movie, which is interesting. And then, so the main star is Richard Thomas, well-known from the Waltons.
Yeah.
John Boy from the Waltons.
Plays Shad.
Shad.
Not Chad, but Shad.
Shad, yeah. It's like very kind of...
I
mean, if George honestly, a lot of the character times... is literally just called Space Cowboy. Yeah. That's his name.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, because we got George Peppard as Space Cowboy. We got Robert Vaughn as Geit. We got John Saxton as the big bad guy, Saldor.
Sador.
That's what it is. Sador. Yeah. Morgan Woodward playing the alien Kamen.
Yeah.
Kind of a lot of like names in this.
Yeah.
Had a pretty low budget, only about $2 million.
Yeah, which is astronomical for a Kamen film.
Although a huge amount of the budget went to Robert Vaughn and George Peppard's.
Of course. What would you expect?
This was one of the first Cameron.
James Cameron was on the. Well, because he worked for Corman back then.
Yeah.
And he was in the production design kind of the sort of art department, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
But he ended up basically doing like the majority of the effects and stuff.
Yeah.
Basically going with barely any sleep.
Yeah.
And it's funny because
having no money, they had to just.
And also because, I mean, he was doing so much himself.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the effects kind of ended up being like one of the most highly regarded things about the movie, because when you think about, especially for the budget, like, and at that time, I mean, this was 1980, it came out, nothing other than, you know, like a big mainstream, like a Star Wars, had effects as good as this.
I mean, though, to compare the effects in this to Star Wars is...
Yeah, but it's still, you gotta think, right? It's like... Less than half the money.
Less than like a fifth of the budget.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Star Wars less had than like a fifth what, is what I meant.
$12 million something like that.
I meant less than a fifth.
Yeah, less than a fifth of the money. Yeah.
Sorry, I was thinking because I was doing two in my head.
Yeah, carry the one.
Yeah. But yeah, like and you know, instead of like a whole big team, it was like mostly just Cameron.
Yeah.
And you know, I know there's the famous, which I've heard many times, the whole famous the McDonald's boxes on the in the corridors, all like those little boxes.
That's how we made the
just who knows how many of those. I mean, I've heard the joke about, man, he must have been eating a lot of McDonald's all the time.
Craft services just providing McDonald's.
but yeah, you know, it's great because when you look more into that sort of that whole era and that history of that, like he did, he also did the in Escape from New York, the effects of when the computer readout of like the computer like graphics of the city, mm-hmm. when the little glider, when like Snake Plissken's taking that little glider into the city,
yeah,
and you got little like computer readout that shows like the shape,
topography of the buildings and everything, which
looked, and it looks all like computer generated. Well, they couldn't actually do that in a computer generated at the time. So what Cameron did was he built models and then basically put like this like reflective tape around the edges of the models so that they would look like these wireframe computer built model buildings, right?
Smart.
And then they shot it like in darkness and
super
so
smart.
Stuff like that, right? Like that's the kind of stuff that he did. So it's no wonder that you know, the way that his movies went with, you know,
having to be inventive with
and also just his dominance in that field of like pushing forward visual effects and things like that. But yeah, I mean,
he could see solutions rather than just like bypassing or going the easy route.
Yeah, the solution is don't sleep and just spend more time on it.
There you go.
Yeah, that's also his solution to the time that he was working on the screenplays for finishing up the script for the first Terminator, working on the script for Rambo 2, and the script for the first original script for Aliens, like at the same time.
And don't do that.
He's got a great story about how, because like he was offered those other jobs while he was still finishing up Terminator, right? And he has a great... So, of course, there was like, you know, what do you call it? Like deadlines and stuff like that. And he has this great story about like his agent. He asked like his agent, like, what should he do about these jobs? And his agent told him to take them all. And he was like, all right. And then what he did was he basically divided up he took the total amount of time that he had from the time he was starting to the time where the deadlines were up, and basically took the total amount of time, subtracted the absolute bare minimum amount of sleep he thought he could get away with, and then divided split that time evenly, and basically just spent that time working on them. So yeah, that's Cameron. No surprise that, you know, so it's kind of interesting in a way that you think like, it's like his name is, I mean, he's in the credits, obviously, for it. But, like, considering, like, how much actual impact he had that, like, would not have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Well, one could say he made the, he is responsible for the only good thing in this movie.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. I mean, only good by, like, comparison to, like, what you would expect.
That's what I say. Like, stylistically, I like this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I like the kind of weird...
It's not...
Like, really out there,
Like,
effects and art style given to everything. It's that, like... not like retro ray gun sci-fi, but it's sort of... It's very much the like, we're going to do something that is, like... Yes, we're drawing inspiration from a Star Wars or a Star Trek, but, like... We're at a certain point, we just make like a 90 degree turn into this like weirdness that I think is really like, there's some cool stuff in this.
It's not good.
Oh, this movie?
Yeah.
No, this movie's...
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's not good, but it's miles ahead of, like, almost any other of those, like...
I'm sure.
Of those, like, quickie, like, Star Wars ripoffs from that era.
And what I'm...
Other than maybe, like, Ice Pirates, which they were aware
that's
going
a different,
in
that's
what
a different,
the situation was going to be, and they decided to lean into the spoof, the comedy aspect, right?
Because honestly, like, what's not good about this movie is... Yeah. Like,
well,
to
it's
me,
like,
is
super boring.
Well, that's exactly
this story
it.
Is
this
so,
movie's an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It takes
nothing happens.
Over an hour, well over an hour mark. So, like, over half, more like almost like two-thirds of the way through the movie before they get, quote-unquote, like, the gang together.
Yeah, yeah.
And the process of getting all these people is basically he flies his spaceship to a spot.
Yeah.
Nothing happens in there.
Yeah.
Talks to somebody
yeah.
and they go, I'll agree to join.
Yeah.
And then they fly away and just nothing happens.
Yeah.
No interesting, like, no interesting conversation.
No.
Nothing happens
there's
when
no,
they're traveling,
no
flying their spaceship.
Like, there's no interesting, like, dialogue, like, not interesting yeah. dialogue, but there's no, like funny, snappy dialogue
no.
or anything.
No.
There's no, like, memorable lines. Like, I don't remember any, like, dialogue from this movie. I just watched it, basically,
it's
right?
It's just... Well, I mean, I watched it last night, and it's just...
Yeah, there's, like, nothing memorable in the actual, like, writing. Nothing really happens, you know, well, at least nothing that's,
there
like,
is
of
one
note.
Plot point
yeah.
thing, and this is actually, it goes into, so like, sort of the one character that I thought was kind of interesting, and, like, well done in a kind of... It was a bit... He kind of an amusing... Not funny, but amusing way.
Yeah.
Was the what are they? Norton?
Oh, like the ones that are, like, the clones?
It's
the
clones.
Like
they're,
multiple,
yeah. And they all share
like
experiences. They're a collective.
Yeah.
And they... Because... And here's where you find out a plot point that is... Could have been something really important,
mm-hmm.
but you don't find it out until this point that... Saldor
yeah.
is like...
Sador.
Sador. Sador. Yeah, Sador. I keep wanting to put an L in there. I don't
yeah.
know why. Sador is, like, in order to, like, live forever, he's,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
stealing body parts, and he's got this doctor that puts him on. And then that is something that I feel like should have been brought up, like, right at the beginning, but isn't. Like, it's just... Like, you see his arm in a sling at the beginning of the movie,
yeah.
but, like, no context. Like, you yeah. don't know why. You're like,
there's a
you're,
lot of,
you're like, you're not even sure if it's a sling. Is it just like,
yeah.
oh, is that just how he, like,
there's
is uniform?
Of, there's a lot of lack of, like, world building.
No, there's no world building.
Like,
it's
where
garbage.
You're just kind of like, wait, what is any
all
of this?
All the weird, like, mutants that work for him,
yeah.
they all have, like, this, like weird, like imprint in their head. And
yeah.
what looks like a cut that's, like...
Yeah.
Like, it's both a scar and bloody at the same time.
Yeah.
And they all have it, and they're all... And you're like... Who are these?
Yeah, yeah.
There's just nothing.
Like, what
there's
is their
nothing.
What is their civilization?
So there's
like,
this
the...
bit where they let one of the Nortons get captured, and so he takes the arm and he's going to attach it. And, like, so they knew that he needed an arm. They knew that he would try to take the Nortons.
Nestor.
Nestor. That's right. He knew he would try to take the Nestor arm.
Yeah.
And then they could control it and, like, use it to try and, like have him, like, kill himself.
Yeah.
But, like, all that... When it starts to happen, when it, like, they do... You're like, wait, what's going on? And they're like, oh, they have this plan based off of information that they haven't given you, based off a plot
well,
point that you weren't
they,
really aware of.
Well, they imply that, basically, they're all part of the same...
Yeah.
They're all connected, so
yeah.
they all basically...
Yeah. Oh yeah. no! The part where that he needed a new arm
yeah,
and that
yeah.
he was going to replace it, like, because none of that's explained. Like,
well,
the bad guys,
yeah.
Well, the bad
it's
guy is just
pretty
nothing,
vague.
Right? Yeah, it's all so vague.
But
yeah.
I mean, it is alluded.
Earl
to.
Bowen, that's who plays the talking.
Really?
Yeah,
that's funny.
Nestor. Yeah, yeah.
I never would have recognized him.
Giant forehead. That's
fair.
They didn't have to make up that. He actually
yeah.
had, that man actually has a huge
still,
forehead.
I never would
yeah.
have.
Well, they got all the super makeup
yeah, yeah.
on and everything.
But yeah, no, it's well,
it's
other,
so vacuous.
I liked, I actually really liked, Richard Thomas's performance. Like,
mm-hmm.
it felt very genuine.
Yes.
And he felt very sort of like, I liked how he was kind of, like, confident, but also, like,
new to whatever everything was going on.
Yeah, but he was like, but he wasn't like freaking out about everything. Mm-hmm. He was very kind of like let's do this, like let's make this work, you know. And then he reacted to everything kind of in a way that was like okay, this is the next challenge. Let's keep it going, you know. Let's deal with this.
Yeah,
and it's a very naturalistic performance that I felt like, because he was obviously at a stage in his career. You know, this was only a couple of years after leaving the Waltons.
Mm-hmm.
He was still kind of at the beginning of his career in many ways. You know, even though he was on the Waltons for many years, but like that was a TV show, which at that time was, you know, that was a ghetto of mm-hmm. for your career. You know,
yeah.
And
well, he was on it for like a decade, right?
Yeah,
like since he was a kid. Like
for 5 years, I think.
Oh, was it 5 years? Oh, okay.
Like five seasons he left.
Okay.
He left after the season five.
Okay.
And then he had like a couple of appearances, I think, in season six. I don't know. I looked it up, but I was just like, I've never actually watched the show.
So yeah, I've never seen The Waltons.
It was kind of meaningless to me. But from what I could gather, it seems like he was in the first five seasons. Then he made a couple of guest appearances in season six. Season seven, I guess, didn't have the character at all. And then, like, seasons 8 and 9, they, like, recast.
Yeah, there you go.
So, but still, right, that was still all within only a few years in the past at most at this point. So he was still sort of at a point where he was building a career apart from that identity as just, like, oh, the kid from, you know, the kid.
But, the kid, yeah.
You know, obviously he was never really that young on the show, but, you know, he was technically, like, a pretty young. So being known as like from that versus like striking out as like potentially like a movie star mm-hmm. in his own right, obviously that's the stage of his career he was at. Whereas like you look at people like Papard or like Robert Vaughn,
mm-hmm.
where like they had sort of had their careers and they were in that stage of like, you know, being hired as like veteran kind of character actors, almost mm-hmm. like supporting actors. And they were big names, but like they weren't really like headlining movies themselves at this point.
I mean,
obviously Papard would soon get,
you know, of course, A-Team,
and that would kind of open it up to a whole new
resurging
stage of his career, and obviously a whole new audience. Because I mean, you know, kids weren't watching George Papard until that happened. Right. He was on that show, and kids are watching that show because I know, because I was one of them,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and that's all I ever knew him for when I was younger. But obviously, like, when I got older, I found out, like, oh, yeah, like, obviously, because he was, like, an older guy, like, he had a whole career already, you know? So, I mean, I think for guys like that, like, they were pretty much just doing the paycheck thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because they were well paid for that because they were veteran mm-hmm. actors that were big names. So, like, they were, like you said, they were a huge chunk of the budget was their salaries. And, so like they really, I mean, what do they really offer to this movie?
I mean,
they offer just
that face.
Yeah. Like the fact that, you know, like, oh, those are like famous dudes.
I mean, I will have to say,
but like I feel like Richard Thomas was making a bit more of an effort because like he was trying to forge his career still at that point, you know?
I mean, I don't think, any of the cast, like the main cast there, I think they all did a good job. Like I didn't feel like any of them were phoning it in.
I mean, maybe not completely out.
But what I think was is
they weren't trying that hard.
There was definitely a different, they weren't all on the same page as to what kind of movie they were making.
Yeah.
Like, Matthew Vaughn was like, dude, it's not that serious a film. And then some of the other, you know, characters like, what was her name? Saint X-Men, the Valkyrie.
Oh, yeah,
who was just like, oh, it's this kind of movie, and just chewed the scenery because that's what felt...
Sybil Danning, yeah.
Yeah, that's what felt appropriate. And then, you know, then we had Richard Thomas, who was like kind of right in the middle, who was like treating it...
Well, he played it pretty straight, but that was his job.
Yeah,
like, he was the Luke Skywalker... I mean, I feel...
Anybody maybe phoned it in, but it was kind of also the least noticeable way of phoning it in was George Papard. Because it feels like George Papard just played George Papard. Like, he didn't... Like, I'm like, I've seen him. He played Space Cowboy, yes.
Which is what he was. Yeah. He was a Space Cowboy.
Yeah, from Earth. Have you heard of it?
Have you heard of it?
Yeah, every time.
Okay, well, there you go. So I guess there is one memorable line or whatever, but it's not that memorable. No,
no. He's got the belt that dispenses scotch or whiskey.
Yeah, he's always like making references and like movies, talking about movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, apparently they don't have movies on other planets, I guess. Or they don't know about movies.
But it was also very hard to understand, like, how serious... I mean, clearly you're not supposed to take, like, the plot of the movie very seriously because it was very, like, so much of it was, like, just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, the main starship, which I was initially very confused, because all the movie posters show it's silver and then it's bright red in the... like, a bright reddy orange in the movie. And I was like, did the poster guys not get the notice?
Well,
and then
that would hardly be.
The design is clearly like it just has two big boobs on the front.
That's correct. Yeah. It does indeed.
And it's just like, what is going on? And so right away I was like, I don't know how I'm supposed to take this. And then I realized, oh, nobody knew how they were supposed to take this. So everybody's just doing their own thing. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to use Richard Thomas as like my baseline because he seems to be like, okay, he's competent. He's given, like you say, he's given the effort, and then I'm just going to judge everybody based on what he's doing. And, you know, but we just spent so much time with him doing nothing at the beginning, and then they have the big fight, and, you know, I've seen many renditions of Seven Samurai. I don't recall any rendition being, we're going to get together this team of guys and then we're going to kill six of them and they were going to have no meaningful impact on what happens at all. And you're like, why are they even here? They just attack the bad guy one at a time, well, I think get killed, and nothing happens.
They were trying to combine the Seven Samurai Renditions, Seven Thing with like, the Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
So basically, like, Shad is, like, pretty much like Luke.
Yeah.
So, like, he has to be the one to, like, kind of do the final save.
Yeah. But they did, other than the Valkyrie there, who actually disables the... what is the secret weapon that turns things to Stardust? The
Stellar Converter, I believe.
Yeah, the Stellar Converter, Most powerful
turns
weapon.
Turns things and turns planets into, like, small suns, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely obliterates everything on it.
And, where she damages that.
Yeah.
Literally none of the rest of them do anything.
What that did was just, it essentially means that it bought them time, essentially, right? Because they would have just fixed it and then eventually...
But they
allowed them to basically...
They picked up that one, the green alien there came in, and he was so, like, in. And I was like, oh! And of course...
because he was motivated by direct, like... Well, he was the Drax of the...
The rest of his people had already been destroyed by...
Motivated by direct...
Sador,
like,
and...
direct revenge on Sador.
And he's actually one of the, like, characters. He's got a very distinct look, and actually, I think a very... The makeup and everything is very good on him.
Yeah.
Like a good design. It looks good.
It's okay for the budget
level. Oh, yeah. Of course.
It looks considering a little bit like, it's a bit like the dude from, like, Last Starfighter, but like...
Yes, kind of like that.
White as good.
Green instead of red, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I recognize this guy from, you know, cultural osmosis from this movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, and he seems to have, like, he's going to play a big part in this. No, does absolutely nothing. Yeah. Makes an absolutely ineffective, like, strafing run on the enemy ship and then gets blown up. Does nothing.
It made me think about, like, man, because I finally saw, not that super long ago, the Anton Fuqua version of Magnificent Seven, the more recent one.
Oh, yes.
Like, after, you know, several years after it actually came out, I finally got around to seeing it. And it made me think, like, man, that movie was like, it wasn't perfect, but it was like so much more the way that like you want it to be in terms of like, okay, you spend the movie gathering up these characters, but like all the time you spend with the characters is interesting in and of itself because you get to know them, you have fun with the whole like them going to each one and meeting the next one and recruiting the next one and how that all kind of like compounds.
It's cumulative.
You know, it's cumulative. And then like at the end, like when they basically, most of them die in the course of the story.
Well, it's impactful because...
It's more impactful because you're just like, oh, you just spent like all this time with these people and you really got to see them like what they were like and you had fun, you know, you had fun with the with those characters.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's like none of that.
No, because when Shaq goes around, he goes by himself to each one of these.
Yeah.
Except for the Valkyrie.
Yeah.
He actually is like, no, just, don't come.
Yeah.
He's got like animosity against her.
Yeah, because he doesn't believe, because she's got this like tiny ship that doesn't really do anything.
It's the fastest ship in the galaxy.
It's fast, but it doesn't really do anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just doesn't understand the whole like, well, what can you contribute?
Yeah. And it's
weird, man.
Everything is so bottled and kind of affects nothing else. And then they just all meet. And like, most of them have never even talked to each other, you know.
It's weird, man. Yeah. It's like so, it's like someone told you about the movie instead of you actually watching the movie. Sure. Like, it's like you're just getting...
They just left out, like... They just gave you, like, the 10,000 viewpoints.
I mean, not that I would want, like...
And then you didn't fill anything
in. Not that I would want, like, a 2-plus-hour version of this movie, but, like...
No. They could have done a lot.
But realistically, that's what you would have needed to, like, fully...
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how long... I mean, Seven Samurai, the original Seven Samurai, is a long movie.
Yeah.
It's, like, a probably 3-hour movie.
Close to,
right? And it's awesome. I imagine the original Magnificent Seven's probably pretty long. I don't know
how that
long
new one's. That new one's 2 hours 15.
Yeah, and the original's probably pretty long, right?
It's
I imagine it's probably over 2 hours.
Only 1 hour 45.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, there you go. So maybe they just did it more efficiently. Yeah. I haven't seen the original in a long time.
Yeah, me either.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's pretty, you know, low on. But I think also the original gets by more on. You know, the level of star power is a bit different, because instead of just having kind of like one or two past their prime stars that are maybe like not phoning it in, like you said, but like, you know, you said they weren't really phoning it in. I don't know if I entirely agree with that. I think that to a certain extent they were, but maybe not entirely.
Well, when I sound like they're not, like, nobody seemed to just be like talking through their
sure. I mean, George Pappard seemed like he was having fun,
yeah,
but he wasn't making a lot of effort.
Yeah,
that's what I'm.
Oh, sure.
That's
sure,
my
sure,
point.
Sure, sure.
Right, like, sure, he seemed to be enjoying it, but he wasn't making a lot of effort. And I feel like in the original film, you had all these huge stars that were like really giving 100%.
Because George Pappard's character was also one of the few that like did a lot more, because he went down to the planet Akir and he like mingled with the people and he was helping them fight off and like, so he kind of did a lot more than the
love interest. No, for sure.
And the two little like heat guys who like took the tank out.
That was weird.
Those characters existed for one purpose, which was to destroy that tank, which was more than most of the other characters did.
Weird.
So
but yeah, like, yeah, it's just so, I don't know, man. It was
It's just boring. It was just so boring. I was so bored.
I thought I had seen it before, but I don't think I have. I think what I've seen was just like a couple of clips here and there, and I sort of heard a lot about it. I definitely had seen part like clips, but like I don't think I've actually seen the whole movie, because I think I feel like I would have remembered it being this kind of just ho-hum. Yeah. But I did really like Richard Thomas. He's actually like real good overall. Like I feel like he's kind of, I don't want to say underrated, but like he didn't have as, maybe because he was so identified with the Waltons, maybe like he didn't have as strong of a career as maybe like I think that he probably deserved in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that he did a good job, and the effects are very impressive for what they are for the time and the budget and everything. Which, thank you, Cameron, for that. I liked some of the choices with, like, in the world of, like, how things, certain things looked or operated. But it was, like, it was just so...
Well, again, without the world building, without like that, it was so meaningless.
It was so in a vacuum, no pun intended.
Yeah.
Because it just felt, it felt, like, so suspended from anything, any meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just felt like, what is this world? I don't really understand it. Like, I don't know, man. It's...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the king of the Star Wars ripoffs, quote-unquote, I think still belongs to Space Pirates.
Because
that movie...
Ice Pirates.
Ice Pirates, thank you. Sorry, I was thinking Space Cowboy.
Yeah, that's all right.
To Ice Pirates, because, like I said, like the fact that they were so self-aware that they were like, everyone is expecting just another Star Wars ripoff. We know it's just going to be bad.
We can't give them
that. Yeah, if we try to do that, it's just going to be bad like all the other ones.
Yeah.
So let's just do like kind of a spoofy comedy thing and work within, you know, within our means. And it's great. It's awesome. Yeah. Don't watch Battle Beyond the Stars.
No.
Just watch Ice Pirates. That's my recommendation for today.
Yeah, I mean, if you're super, like, if you're curious, you could watch some clips on YouTube and you'll get the gist.
If you're like
honestly, if you just watch the trailer,
right,
you'll see all you need to see.
Like, if you're a big fan of, like, James Cameron movies and you want to see, like, the kinds of stuff that he did before he was known as a filmmaker, like the effects stuff that he did, you know, you can check it out for that. Just remember, you know, of course, like that's, I mean, it's pretty much all handcrafted, so it's still pretty limited, but it's impressive what he managed to achieve given the circumstances.
Just go take a look at the movie poster.
Yeah,
it's got the whole cast there, and just be like, most of these people die with no effects.
Yeah. Well, that's the dumbest thing. Like, it's just like, what was the point of any of that? Like the Oren movie was better.
Yeah.
And that was not good.
No.
You know? But at least, like, the characters did more.
More effort in the world building. Well, that's kind of what surprised us about that movie in general, was just how much world building they did.
It felt like, this movie felt like, what was weird is it had a lot of this, like...
Well, okay, sorry.
You know what I think part of the problem is, actually, with this movie? Is I think part of the problem is that they were going for such a more of a, like, mainstream... Like, they were trying for that Star Wars audience so hard.
Yeah.
Like, they were going for this very mainstream, like, PG kind of thing. Where, like, if you look at the other Roger Corman produced movies from around this time that were, like, the sci-fi kind of stuff, like, which I think they reused a lot of elements from this movie, because this would be the first one they did.
Yeah, yeah. And
I think they reused a lot of elements.
They got a lot of flack for that, too.
From this movie in later stuff. Well, but that's a Corman. I mean,
Corman. It's a Corman.
Corman always did that, because that's how you do it when you're making, you know, B-movie schlock and pumping stuff out. But the other movies that they did were all more, like, kind of horror-influenced, very adult kind of movies with a lot of, like, exploitive elements. You know, like, they might have, like, nudity, or they have, like, gore, or, you know. And so, like, in a way, like, those movies, though, while they're not necessarily good either, actually kind of hold up better in some ways, because they kind of, like, they have more to them, and they kind of, like, they were kind of shooting for more, whereas, like, this movie is just so, it's like, because they were just going for this really tamed down, like, middle of the road, like, we're going for a general audience here kind of thing. And it's like, you're not good enough to get away with that.
Yeah.
There's a reason why exploitation movies have those exploitation elements, because, like, that's all they really have to offer, because they're not good movies.
No, the point is the exploitation.
They're not good movies otherwise. If you take all the exploitation stuff out of exploitation
movies, it's not entertaining.
They're
anymore.
Not good movies.
Yeah.
So this would be kind of like that. Where it was just like, let's make this, like, cheap B-movie, but try to make it for, like, a main audience. And it's like, that's not going to work, because you need to make it good.
Now, I'm fairly unfamiliar with Corman's work. The only other Corman movie I've seen is Death Race 2000.
Well, that should give you a clue right there.
You know,
that's pretty standard for his style.
And I, when I saw Death Race 2000, like, I didn't know who Corman was at the time, because I saw it years and years ago. I mean, I've seen it since.
Have you ever seen the original Little Shop of Horrors?
The old black and white? No, I've only seen the new one. I've only seen the new one.
Because that was Corman, and that was like, I mean, that movie was made in, like, days.
Yeah.
Like, that was just...
But, like, I am, like... Seeing, like, kind of the effort that went into this.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it didn't turn out in the story end of things. But I am kind of more interested to see, like, okay, what I mean, although I've seen Desperation, like, I want to see some good Corman.
I can actually, I can help you with that.
Okay.
I can make a recommendation on that. In the 60s, Corman had a whole run of Edgar Allan Poe inspired movies.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with, like, that. Vincent Price. I haven't seen them, but I do know
that. Vincent Price was in most of them, if not all of them. And then some of them had, like, Boris Karloff in his later years.
Okay.
And a couple of other people. And that's where Jack Nicholson got his start. Those are good.
Oh, okay.
So
stay away from, like, all the, like, the monster movies, anything like that.
I don't know how many. Well, I guess later on.
You know, stuff
on,
like Beast with 10,000 Eyes or Attack of the Giant Crabs or anything
like
that.
That's
stuff.
Like all, like, later. That's probably like 80s stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, because I know, like, he started to. Like, that's where he, like, really started to turn to, like, churn out the schlock was in the 80s. Okay. And where basically he just became more of a producer that would just hire people to make, like, B movies essentially and churn them out. But in the 60s, those Poe movies, like The Black Cat.
Most of the ones I'm thinking of are actually his 50s movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know those at all.
Yeah.
But I imagine those ones would probably fit right in to the time and were just standard for the time.
Well, that was sort of my, which it sort of feels like he's a man who had, like, ideas for, like, doing certain kinds of movies.
Yeah.
And as times changed and what could be done and what was expected of movies, he didn't want to go that route. And so that's why he ended up going the more exploitation direction.
Well, it was also basically he could have control because he was basically like his own studio, essentially.
Right.
So he could just basically decide what got made and how.
Mm-hmm.
And then just hire people, you know. And a lot of up-and-coming talents, like a lot of filmmakers got their start.
Right.
Working for Corman, right? Cameron being just one of them, but, like, a lot of people that later became very prominent directors or in other aspects of the industry had worked for Corman early on, right? It's a great sort of testing ground for new talent, right? Fall of the House of Usher, what's another one? Like, The Black Cat.
Okay.
Any of those Poe, like, 60s ones are good.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, The Black Cat, I think it is, has, like, Vincent Price, Jack Nicholson's, like, I think one of his first ones. It had Peter Lorre.
Color being intrigued.
And, those ones are all good. Okay. They're all good. All
right.
Any of those ones I would recommend. Not The Terror.
Okay.
Which is, The Terror was like a quickie movie that they made in a couple of days when they had some time left over after finishing one of the Poe ones.
Good stuff.
And so they still had access. They had Boris Karloff and they had the sets and stuff for like a couple extra days. And they're like, let's just make another movie. And so they just like threw it together. The Terror is terrible. But yeah, like any of the actual Poe based ones are good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with another movie. Until then, I'm Chris.
This is Evan.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.